With more screen usage and indoor time, myopia, also known as nearsightedness, is increasing and getting worse in children. Now, certified eye doctors can prescribe MySight One Day, the first and only FDA-approved soft contact lens to slow myopia progression in age-appropriate children. Visit CooperVision.com to find a Brilliant Futures certified eye doctor near you. Do your patients know what presbyopia is?
There are people who are afraid of the press.
Have you talked to your patients about multifocal contact lenses?
I've heard the bifocal, but not
right,
multifocal.
Do you need help with your multifocal strategy? Learn more at the conclusion of this episode.
Your eyes and your vision are under attack. Damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with MicroMicell, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and MicroMicell technology.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Kerry Gilb, and welcome to Open Your Eyes Radio. Please listen as I discuss the newest information in the world of health, nutrition, and sports every Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Central Time on AM 1280 of The Patriot. Also, please share your thoughts by emailing me at drkerrygilb@gmail.com and visit my website at drkerrygilb.com. Binocular vision, or BVD, has been an undiscovered cause in one out of five patients suffering from headaches, dizziness, gait imbalance, anxiety, light sensitivity, neck pain, and reading difficulties. Many patients have gone from specialist to specialist without relief. Today's guest, optometrist and founder of the Neurovisual Medicine Institute, Dr. Debbie Feinberg. Dr. Feinberg and her colleagues have treated over 30,000 patients with the little-known treatment of microprisms. Dr. Feinberg's groundbreaking research has shown neurovisual care to be 80% effective, even in TBI patients. Dr. Feinberg's mission is to help the once thought unhelpable and increase access of neurovisual care for patients across the globe. Dr. Debbie, as she's affectionately known, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me here, Kerry.
So, Dr. Debbie, what is binocular vision disorder?
It's an understanding that the two eyes are not working together as a team, and they may be off on the vertical, the horizontal plane, but we don't have single fusional imagery that is effortless. We have patients who have a lot of symptoms that are directly related to the fact that the two eyes are not in synchrony with each other.
So how common is this?
We believe it to be as much as 20% in the general population, as much as 50% in children with learning challenges, and probably just as high, if not more, in the patients with traumatic brain injury or concussion.
So I saw a statistic that it's about 60 or 65% of the population could have it, but what percentage of those actually have symptoms where it's bothering them?
Again, we don't really have foundational prevalence studies, but by looking at some of the data we've collected over the past 27 years of doing this work, we definitely see it in about 20% of the population that are symptomatic coming to our office for care.
And many of these patients have been to 4 to 7 doctors before they find a doctor that could deal with these BVD symptoms or these binocular vision problems. Why is it that they don't know about this? Why doesn't the public know about this problem?
The perspective that I have on that question has to do with the fact that in our population of patients seeking medical care, if you have a headache, you go to the neurologist. If you're dizzy, you go to the ENT. If you're anxious, you go to the psychiatrist or the psychologist. So I think the problem with the misunderstanding or lack of understanding is how connected all of these symptoms are to BVD, because we're all working in different silos. So when we first started doing this work, we began developing a questionnaire that could peel off all those different symptom layers to identify with a questionnaire that, in fact, the anxiety, the dizziness, the nausea, the headache, are, and imbalance with walking are all connected to this condition.
And you talked about just now about some of the symptoms. I mentioned some of them in my intro. Talk about some of the classic binocular vision symptoms that people may have. They're sitting at home, they're listening to this, and there are people out there that have gone from doctor to doctor, like we spoke about, and they just can't find relief. And people in their family think they're crazy. And, you know, they walk into a mall and it freaks them out, and they're always getting car sick. And one of the parents is getting mad at them and thinking it's all in their head. So let's talk about some of the symptoms of binocular vision or BVD symptoms. Start with the classic symptoms.
So some of the classic ones are, let's say, I'm skipping lines when I try to read. You know, one eye's on one line, one eye's on the other. I'm not able to maintain my place on the page. I'm fatigued with reading. I'm struggling with concentration. So those are the more classic visual ones that we're all most familiar with. Some people would talk about asthenopia or eye strain when they're reading. So those, again, are pretty well known. I think the most interesting ones are the ones that we don't think about. The highest Google search right now to our office is anxiety on highways. And the most interesting part about that unique symptom is that it's all that flicker frequency in the peripheral vision that can be distracting and make patients feel like they're almost getting a bit of a spin or dizziness, and they have to pull off to get on the side road to calm down their nervous system. So when these two eyes are not working together, they're actually picking up on peripheral imagery that makes them feel very scared, very anxious, and dizzy as well.
You know, there's a number of people that have a lot of anxiety going over a bridge when they're driving over a bridge. Could that be part of this?
Yes. So when two eyes don't work well together as a team, there's definite challenges with depth perception, whether I'm looking over down at from a tall building, down at the ground below, when I'm on that bridge and I'm looking slightly downward. When I don't know where things are in space, which is many of these patients, they don't have very good depth perception. So things actually feel like they're in motion, they're moving, and they feel really scared that they're going to fall over, for example.
I mean, this is so interesting because there's so many people out there, like you said, close to 20% of the population, and there hasn't been a lot of help for these people. And, you know, you see kids that have trouble reading. Some of the classic reading symptoms, you mentioned a couple of poor comprehension, having to read things over and over again. Kids that can't read out loud, they try to read out loud. They're at a family gathering and they're trying to read out loud and they're hiding under the table because they don't want to be called on at that family function or in class in school. You know, they have to read things over and over again. They're losing their place. They're using their finger. They're skipping lines. They're very slow readers, but a lot of them, you know, are very smart people, and they do things to compensate, like speak into a tape recorder and try to listen to it. They try to use auditory to learn. Can you speak to those type of people?
Yeah, so that we call them auditory learners. They have to use other senses to help them pick up the information because their visual system is not helping them. So yeah, they become people that are afraid to read. They almost get phobias about reading out loud. They're just not feeling very confident because the pace at which they have to work so hard to keep their eyes on the page is so slow that they end up losing their place. They skip lines. And sometimes they'll close an eye, they'll cover an eye. So all of these things mean that to get information visually is so difficult for them. I always say it has nothing to do with your intellect. It has everything to do with the fact that you're just not able to process visually. These are plenty smart people, but their visual system is not helping them function in a normal setting.
And some people have symptoms of pain. They have pain symptoms because their eyes they're misaligned. Could you talk about some of those?
Sure. So I like to describe the fact that we have six muscles around each eye. Then we have the ciliary muscles connected to the lens. So with all this muscle engagement to coordinate imagery, those muscles get fatigued by this constant effort to fuse or bring together the images. So they often talk about, you know, pain above their eye, pain underneath their eye, pain in the temples, pain behind their eyes. And they just want to close their eyes because all that effort is so tiring and painful. They just avoid it. They'll, every 10 minutes, they'll just have to look away, take a deep breath, and then try to go back to it or just avoid it altogether.
As people get older, do these symptoms get better, worse, or they just manifest a little bit differently?
I would say as people get older, they become more troubled by trying to function in a busy world with reading texts on your phone, being on computers all day at work. These might have been people who never liked to read, and all of a sudden they have to be on a screen all day long, staring at lines of print. So it isn't unusual for us to have patients be told as an adult they have ADHD, and maybe they've never even diagnosed as a child, but the truth is it's the same symptoms they had as a child, but they could compensate. But now as an adult with the demands of a 40-hour work week on screens, they are really struggling to function.
And we talked about pain symptoms. How about some of the novel symptoms, like sensitivity to patterns and glare? Talk about some of those.
So when two eyes aren't working together and you're looking at a blank canvas, you're fine. But if you start to add stimulation with patterns, these eyes that, again, aren't working very well together are going to be you'll experience visual confusion. And you'll actually get dizzy when you look at patterns that are overstimulating the visual system. When we talk about the light sensitivity, if we have two eyes that aren't in synchrony, they'll actually see a sliver of light around everything they look at. So there's a lot of issues with glare and just too much light coming into the system. When we put the eyes together and synchronize them, when we correct these patients with microprism, their sensitivity to light often dissipates.
So we're going to talk about microprism as a treatment, but before we do that, we want to set the background, because I want people that are listening, because they may have one of these symptoms, and people don't realize the ear bone is connected to the eye bone. So let's talk about vestibular problems.
So many of these patients have issues with balance. They have often felt clumsy, klutzy. They used to walk into door jams when they're walking next to their friends. They'll say, "Can you get in your own lane? You're walking into my space." They don't have any sense of orientation or centeredness. So the ears and the eyes work very closely together. And when we're moving in space and turning our head side to side, just the act of doing that movement with our head means we're engaging the vestibular and the ocular systems as one. So when the ears are off or the eyes are off, we'll have many of these vestibular symptoms like imbalance, dizziness, nausea, and so on.
You know, as a kid growing up, I was very clumsy. I would drop things all the time. And my father would say to me, "For somebody that's such a good athlete," because I was very good in sports, "you're very clumsy. You're very klutzy. You're always dropping things." And it turned out that I have an eye issue. I have a convergence insufficiency, which is pretty common. I think maybe up to 2-4% of the population. And can you talk about what convergence insufficiency is and why that may cause somebody to be clumsy?
Sure. So, you know, when people are trying to converge their eyes or turn their eyes in to read print, if the eyes are struggling to converge, that'll mean that they're just not able to make sense of the print. But let's talk about sometimes in these patients with a misalignment on the vertical plane, they also can't converge. So that inability to synchronize images again on the horizontal plane and convergence can sometimes be a byproduct of a slight misalignment on the vertical plane. And those are my clumsy, klutzy, disoriented in space patients.
And typically with those type of patients, which is very common. If you, when you get your eyes examined, you want to ask, especially when you read, if you lose your place, you misread, your comprehension isn't as good as it could be. You want to ask the doctor, if it's for yourself or your child, if they do have convergence insufficiency. This is one of the easy ones. We're going to talk about vertical misalignments in a little bit, but this is one of the easy ones. Now, most people that have convergence insufficiency do have symptoms. I've noticed as an eye doctor, seeing many, many patients. Now, how do you know how much prism you would give somebody with convergence insufficiency? Well, first we have to explain to the public, what is prism? And then how would you know how much prism to give?
So in our world, with the work that we do over 17 different binocular vision tests. We do them for vertical and horizontal. Where are these images? You know, tell me when they're side by side, like headlights on a car. Tell me when they line up like buttons on a shirt. So we do those kinds of measurements in the near realm and the far realm. And when we do these multiple tests, we also like to do it outside of the instrument that we're used to using, where they say which is better, one or two. We often do a lot of these measurements in free space. And when we do that, we're taking into account all this assembly of data and then analyzing it to see where is the preponderance of information coming in. And then we do a lot of testing with their prescription into a trial frame. And then we're able to use small units, fractional units, to actually see, are we making the image clearer and more comfortable? And then we must move our patients in space. We never stay seated because we have to engage the entire system to move down a long hallway, to move our heads when in motion. So that will guide our outcome to what will we be prescribing.
You know, it's very interesting because there's a lot of people that have convergence insufficiency, and we were taught in school 6XO, which is, I'll let you explain that, is normal. Do you believe that 6XO is normal, or is 6XO actually too much and is partial convergence insufficiency?
When you speak of XO, you're speaking of, you know, the fovea. How are the eyes at rest, both at near and at far? At far, our eyes are supposed to be pretty much synchronized with no XO, and at near, 8 is what we call normal. I think what's the most interesting thing, because I loved vision therapy when I was in school, but when I started doing this work, what I actually discovered is that those who aren't able to converge, it doesn't have to do with their 6XO or 8XO. It actually has to do with a hidden vertical. So I've had children go through these therapy protocols that I used to do, where they can't converge very well. They do their eye exercises. But what we ultimately find is when they're failing at that, unable to do it, if we can find that hidden vertical, which I've done hundreds and hundreds of times, the patients can converge beautifully. So did they really have convergence insufficiency? It's probably the greatest question of all. It is the hidden vertical in many of these cases.
So explain what a fovea is again, because people have never heard this before. You and me know what it is. And what exophoria is and esophoria is for the people listening, because it sounds like a different language, which it really is.
So we'll speak of exophoria at near. The near posture is normally the eyes are slightly at rest in an outward posture. That's the exo posture. When we have patients that have eso posture, they actually are crossing their eyes unintentionally, but the eyes are sitting slightly inward. So if you think of somebody who has an outward eye or an inward eye, those are the eso and those are the exo postures. These are postures at rest when we're not trying to engage. So that's probably the best explanation for those postures.
We went on a little tangent there because I have an interest in that. And I see so many patients and I have it myself. Let's go back to vestibula, because that also would balance. Vestibula to me means balance. How the eye and the ear are connected, if you could explain that, and, you know, why that could cause people to be off balance, and why with this little micro prism, which we have to explain what prism is. First, let's explain what prism is. and microprism, which is little prism. So explain prism, and then we're going to go back to the vestibular.
So prism is a lens that bends light. So if I see one image here and one image here, and I want to bring them in the same plane, I'll use a vertical prism to slowly move the image into that alignment. Again, a prism is a lens that bends light, moving the image so that we see it as if it were on the same plane. We can put it right into the glasses so that patients don't see things off alignment.
And let's go back to vestibular balance. Explain how the eye and the ear are related.
So I use an analogy when I'm teaching my course, which is a 1 week long course. I teach my colleagues about the fact that, you know, here we're from the Motor City in Detroit, right? We're all about automobiles. So I use the auto analogy. The front two wheels of the car are my eyes, and the back two wheels are my ears. We don't think about it, but all four tires need to be equally inflated and to give us a smooth ride. So in our work, we're synchronizing visual images, but we're also saying, are these two ears working together, which is unusual for an optometrist thinking about ears.
Yes, it is. It is unusual for optometrists to think about ears. But some of the symptoms when the vestibular system is off is dizziness, lightheadedness, motion sickness. We talked before about car sickness, being unsteady when you're walking. We're speaking with Dr. Debbie Feinberg. This is Dr. Kerry Gelb for Open Your Eyes Radio on AM 1280, The Patriot. And we're having an incredible discussion trying to help people out there who are suffering. So right after the break, we're going to talk with Dr. Feinberg a little bit more about how the eyes and the ears are related. We'll be right back after the break.
MacuHealth, your science-born and tested solutions for visual performance, macular degeneration, and dry eye syndrome. New products coming soon. Embrace the science.
We're back with Dr. Debbie Feinberg, the founder and director of Clinical Instruction Neurovisual Medicine Institute. She practices in Michigan in Bloomfield Hills. This is Dr. Kerry Gelb for Open Your Eyes Radio and AM 1280, The Patriot. Right before we had the break, we were talking about some symptoms of vestibular problems where the eyes and the ears are connected, and it's complicated, it gets confusing, but people at home have some of these symptoms and we want to try to help them if we can. So if you could review some of the vestibular symptoms and some of the testing and how you work with ENT specialists to get this right to help people.
You know, the beginning of my work started with an ENT who was my brother-in-law, and he was my first index patient. He was clumsy, klutzy. He walked into furniture. He met me and he said, you know what, can you check my eyes out? He was using a loose prism in front of one of his eyes to exercise them, given to him by someone who was doing vision therapy with him. So he actually came in and I found out he was off on the vertical plane. Once his eyes were synchronized, he felt much better in space, much more coordinated, but he began to listen to his patients differently, realizing that while they complained about their balance and their inner ear, it might have actually been their eyes. So he began this parade of off balance with canes, with walkers, dizzy patients that I did not even know I could help. So that's been the greatest joy of this work, is really opening up a whole new field as an optometrist to helping patients that we really initially didn't learn about in school that we could care for.
You know, it's an unbelievable feeling when you have a patient who's been to many doctors and they haven't been able to be helped, and we're the ones that could help them, you know, and it really is a great feeling. And you're getting that feeling frequently.
Yeah, it's our greatest joy to have somebody coming in, no hope, not sure there's any way to function. They can't keep their job. Their spouse is frustrated with them. They almost sound like hypochondriacs. The most interesting thing about this work is there is a psychological component. When you don't feel safe in space, whether it's on the highway, on the bridge, or in an open air grocery store, everybody thinks you just have a psychological condition, but really, when our eyes are not teeming, we're seeing so much that's overwhelming. These patients end up becoming agoraphobic. They actually don't want to leave the house. So others are really misunderstanding them. So to give them foundational knowledge to know, in fact, you can feel good in space if we just can help these two eyes to work together, that can be a game changer for them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of psychological symptoms that they have, from panic attacks to depression, anxiety, feeling overwhelmed, because everything is kind of related.
Yes. In fact, I was a psych minor in college, and I used to, my very first patient, when I put on the prism glasses, she said, "Did you give me Valium?" And I said, "No." "Is that how you feel?" She said, "Yeah, I feel so calm in my body." And I'm just writing away and saying, "Wow, this is so fascinating that I could calm a nervous system so expediently." So those are some of the most fascinating things that you can do as a clinician, is that anxiety is physiologic. And if you look up Google dizzy, you'll see dizzy equals anxiety, because they just don't know where they are in space.
And let's go to vertical phoria. And we touched on it a little bit. You know, it's confusing. Explain again what it is and some of the symptoms that people may have if they have this vertical misalignment of their eyes.
So it's when we talked about the natural state of rest that the eyes might be in on the horizontal plane. That's the convergence aspect. But sometimes they're off on the vertical plane. The problem there is with convergence, I could sort of bring my eyes in and work a lot to do that. But if my eyes are off on the vertical plane, it's sort of hard to bring them together this way. So you'll see people with the adopted head tilt, because when they do that, they can align the eyes, but then the neck starts to hurt. So vertical misalignment causes people to have a lot of neck pain because they can compensate with that tilt, but then it drives other symptoms. So vertical misalignment is a whole lot harder for us to compensate for, which is why I think it drives so many more symptoms.
And what do you feel is the best way to measure that when a patient comes in, this vertical misalignment?
Well, when we were in school, we learned about the von Graaff phorias, and they do help us measure eyes on the vertical plane, horizontal plane, both far and near. The problem with a lot of that testing is that behind instruments, we can compensate. We can sort of use our effort to exert on this alignment. So in our work, we actually use a lot of, as I mentioned, outside of instrument testing. We might use the Maddox rod. We might use a pen light. We observe gait analysis. If I have somebody walking down a long hallway and they've got their head tilt, they're off to the right side, they're off to the left side, I'm actually beginning to analyze their misalignment just by physical diagnosis.
And so we make the diagnosis, we see that there's a vertical misalignment. So the next step is you're going to test prism. Explain how you're going to test it and what is the initial success with the initial lenses, prism lenses, glasses that they're put in a frame, just they look like glasses. So for people listening, people can't tell that you're wearing these prism, that you're wearing this. You know you're wearing it, you feel a lot better, but nobody else knows. So it's not something weird that you're wearing, like a funny looking shoe or something like that. So talk about this, our initial evaluation, how we're going to see how they're doing and what percentage of people start feeling better.
Yeah, so we place all their prescription into a trial frame, and then we work with them with these small units.
As now, explain what a trial frame is. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, sure. A trial frame is a big metal frame, and it has four wells in it, and each well can hold another lens. So we can put their nearsighted, farsighted correction, their astigmatism, and then on top of those two bases, we can then add the vertical and horizontal prism where needed. So doing that, we're able to use signage to help them see with clarity. And once it seems like the vision is clearer, then we again move them in space. And as we move them in space, we test whether or not they're grounded, they're dizzy, they're anxious. How do their symptoms evolve over that time frame of working with them. By the end of the first visit, we're often identifying that their improvement in symptoms is about 50%. And if you think about it, they're coming with very tight muscles. We're starting to relax those muscles with the proper prescription, with the proper prism. Then we send them off with a proper pair of glasses they pick up in a week. They wear those for 4 weeks. Then they come back for a critical visit called a progress assessment. So imagine your muscles are tight, but then they start to relax. So when they return for that visit, they're almost ready for a new updated prescription because they're in a different space. Their eye muscles are much more relaxed. They're actually ready for either a fine tuning of their correction with glasses, with the prescription, or with prism. It can be either or both. And then we're again putting on the trial frame and we're looking for a continued reduction in their symptoms.
So you made the first pair of glasses, they come back, and now we have to make another pair of glasses. How much time does it take to get the first pair of glasses? How much time does it take once you measure the second pair for the patient to get the second pair?
It's always a week because we rely on a lab to make them perfectly and properly. So we order them, they come in a week, and then we send them off for about a month, 3 to 4 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks, depending on how long we want to have them wait. Then they come back to us for that progress assessment, again, 1 week to get the glasses, and then they're wearing those. And by that last second visit, they describe 80% improvement in their symptoms.
Now, something that I find very interesting is that you'll prescribe prism down to a quarter diopter. And will you ever even do less than a quarter diopter?
It's not that patients aren't more sensitive than a quarter, but we say the majority of them seem to respond beautifully to a quarter. And to hold our lab's feet to the fire to get a quarter, we're happy to get that small increment. We find most people really are successful with quarter units.
Yeah, so we use the word diopter, but that's the unit of prism. You know, that's the unit that we use. So just think of a quarter, because there's something called the ANSI standards, which is the American National Standard Institute. And that's has leeway up to a quarter. So that means they could make a mistake either way and still be within the ANSI standard. So how do you navigate through that?
You know, we're big believers in training and teaching. So we've done a lot of training of our lab and talking to them and having them know that quarters matter. We once talked about having a sign in our office that would say, quarters matter. You've got to pay attention. If you miss it, you'll make my patient dizzy. So being very specific and very attentive to the fractional units makes all the difference in the world for our patients.
And who do you have in your office that measures the glasses when they come in to make sure they're made correctly? That's probably not that easy to measure.
Exactly. We have a bench optician. We do make glasses in our office. We have a finishing lab. But we've had many people come to train with us who don't have a finishing lab, but they spend at least an hour with our bench optician, if not longer, by the phone. We talk about videos over the phone. We will make sure that every doctor coming to train learns how to measure fractions using manual lensometer or automated.
And how hard is it to learn how to do that, to be able to measure down to a quarter?
I would say it's very doable. It's very just methodical. There's a recipe. We just ask them to follow it closely.
Now, you screen patients with a questionnaire. It's been over 50,000 people have completed this questionnaire. Explain what this questionnaire is, the name of it, and how could people take this questionnaire?
So this questionnaire is called the BVDQ, Binocular Vision Dysfunction Questionnaire. It has 25 questions. It covers the domain of head pain, dizziness, anxiety, visual symptoms, and putting all that together, we have an actual score. It's been validated now as a tool for identifying symptom burden. So it has a score. Anything 15 or greater will indicate that this patient is likely to have BVD. And when patients score in the 40s, we know there's a complex condition that may not just be eyes. We've actually identified higher levels of scores can have more things going on in their diagnosis.
And when you identify these people, can they go on your website and take this test?
They can certainly go on our website, Vision Specialists of Michigan, but they can also use the URL isitmyeyes.com without any spaces. And when they do that, the questionnaire will show up and then they can fill it out and then type in the city and state that they live in. And then they will get a response that same day with their score. How did they score? And with information about what kind of doctor can they see in their area. We have now trained 50 doctors that they will be able to access somebody in their area.
And what give us an example of a couple of questions that may be on the questionnaire.
Are you anxious in big open stores? Are you anxious in crowds? Are you dizzy when bending down and coming back up quickly or when looking from side to side? Are you skipping lines? Are you rereading for comprehension? So that, do you have headache? Do you have dizziness when you're riding in a car?
And how do you add vision therapy, eye exercises, or usually you don't even need the eye exercise, the prism or the microprism, the small prisms in the glasses is enough?
So when I graduated from school, I loved vision therapy. I was even doing it on my brother-in-law before I actually gave him the prism. And vision therapy is a wonderful tool. But for my brother-in-law, he was clear. He said, Debbie, get these people back to work and get them back to school. They don't have time for your eye exercises. So he really pushed me hard. And my office, I worked with my father, and I call it an incubator. It allowed me the time and space to figure things out. So it's not that vision therapy isn't effective and doesn't work, but there's an expediency in many cases where you're trying to resolve symptoms after, let's say, a car accident, and the patient has just so many minutes in the day for all their other therapies. So very often, to be able to ground them, reduce symptoms immediately that same day as their first visit can be quite helpful to with their extended care that's needed beyond just the glasses.
And your neurovisual protocol has been used to treat over 45,000 patients around the globe. Can you give us an example of some of the people and that you've treated, some of people that have come in with some problems and some stories if you could help us with?
Sure. The very first young man that came that drove me to decide to teach was a young man that took 2 Greyhound buses to get here from Texas. And he had no other way to get to the office. And I was able to help him. But when I got home that night, I said, we'd already by that time had hundreds of people coming from all over the country and all over the globe. They'd flown from Norway to Australia. And I finally said, you know what, this is something I must teach. I have the knowledge. Now we have to put it into a sort of a manual, if you will. So I think that the important part about this work is making sure that there's somebody in everybody's hometown so they don't have to get in a car to travel. I had a young man that saved up money for 2 years. It came from Alabama and drove all the way with his family members. So he'll be coming actually next week for his annual visit. So the goal is really to help people. I've had people fly from overseas, from Bulgaria. So when they Google their symptoms and they've been to 10 doctors, you talked about the 4 to 7, sometimes they've seen even more than that over a decade. When they finally read online that there's somebody helping them with dizziness, with disorientation, they take the test. We call them back, they're scoring high. We do a couple of things over the phone. When we can give them enough confidence that they should come for care, then they feel like there's hope. You know, sometimes people lose hope and don't know there's a way out of their misery. So that's what really drove people to come from far away. We know last year there were 1,200 people filling out the questionnaire from England. And you know, my new next mandate is I've got to train overseas if I can have that opportunity. that's my next goal, is to train in the U.S. and maybe beyond.
Wow, that's amazing, and that's great. You're doing great work, helping a lot of people. I did want to ask you back to the vertical fourias, with the vertical misalignment. If it's monocular versus binocular, if it's monocular, is it just eye? If it's binocular, does that mean it's eye and ear? And does prism help both?
Yes, there's a theory that we've been having a working model theory that when it is two eyes, there's likely to be what we call utricular dysfunction. In other words, there can be harm done to the inner ear that we may not know or see, but it may explain why there is this need for prism in both eyes. We've always learned about superior oblique palsy, trochlear nerve innervating the superior oblique muscle. So those are very common in patients with head injury, and they usually require prism on the single eye. It's when this unique characteristic of them wanting it on both eyes that we've done further research. And the answer is, yes, we can help them with prism, even though there's some dysfunction at the inner ear level. But there are also new patients that we're learning about that have a dysfunction that may need further attention by either an ENT or an otologist who does structural work on the deep inner ear.
And the cause of this, we didn't talk enough about the cause. Is it only people that have been in accidents, car accidents, that have TBI, concussions, or could people just be born with this type of issue?
We certainly see enough that are congenital in nature, but there is a preponderance of those. I would say in our office alone, over 75% are finding their way. And they didn't think about that injury. Maybe they were 2 years old, fell on the fireplace hearth, but nobody even thought that that was a thing. But they hated to read. They never liked to read. They always, you know, were wobbly and off balance. So I think it's always my favorite thing to talk about is the history. You know, our exam is 80 minutes in length. And if I was in a hurry, I would never learn what I learned about these patients in that time frame. So just to take a really detailed history to find out, oh, this happened to you. You were on a ski slope. You fell. You hit your head. From that point on, you had some dizziness. I would say congenital and TBI or acquired brain injury. It can happen from stroke. It can happen from anoxia. I've had patients near drowning, which all of a sudden they have some imbalance visually.
You know, and some people are just born with asymmetry. Their globes, one globe is higher than the other. You know, the bone structure. And if you draw a line through it, you can see that one eye is higher than the other. And I would assume that those people probably are pretty symptomatic.
They are. And those are the ones that start out as kids sort of compensating with their head tilt. But then as they get older, it's much more difficult to compensate.
You know, this is just wonderful information. I'm talking with Dr. Debbie Feinberg. I really appreciate you spending these 45 minutes, hour with us on our Open Your Eyes radio on AM 1280 The Patriot. If people want to find out more about you and your organization and how you teach people, how can they do that?
We have a website called neurovisualmedicineinstitute.org. So they can certainly go to our neurovisualmedicineinstitute.org website. They can always email me, Dr. Debbie, D-R-D-E-B-B-Y, at VSOFM.com.
And where your practice is in Bloomfield Hills, if they want to visit you there?
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you again. You were an amazing guest. You have an amazing amount of knowledge. This is Dr. Kerry Gelb, and tune next week. This is Open Your Eyes Radio on AM 1280, The Patriot. Thank you for listening.
Your eyes and your vision are under attack, damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with Micromycel, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and Micromycel technology.
Fitting multifocal contact lenses presents a big opportunity to meet patient needs while growing your practice. Alcon is your partner not only with our innovative portfolio, but through e-learning. Learn to enhance your multifocal strategy today with the Alcon Experience Academy.
OIE Broadcasting is the emerging leader in social media.
We use scientific entertainment to drive more patients into your office.
Visit OIEBroadcasting.com and sign up today.